is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, well and rested, back from my vacation. Louise and I took a week, joined one of our daughters and her boyfriend and his parents and his kids in Hawaii for 5 days, I think it was. And then yesterday I was out in Los Angeles, day before yesterday, I was out in Los Angeles speaking at Marianne Williamson's Sister Giant gig, which I had promoted a week ago on the show here. So it's been a jet-lagged week, but I'm back, and I'm really pleased to be back. And, boy, is it interesting to hear this old right-wing talk radio host, Mike Pence. It's amazing how many of these guys got their starts as right-wing talk radio hosts. It's just astonishing. But in any case, here's Mike Pence on what show was this? Face the Nation, Meet the Press, George Stephanopoulos. So it wasn't one of the. It's Sunday, Face the Republicans. Oh, this week, yeah. Okay, well, it's the same thing. It's all Republicans all the time. That's the Sunday shows. After all, they're owned by big corporations, and the big corporations are owned by Republicans, and on it goes. But anyhow, here's a mashup that Shano put together. Because Mike Pence kept filibustering and trying to go off on tangents and things. So we just kind of boiled it down to the essential essence of it. Just for those of you who might have been, on vacation, kind of missed what was going on. The state of Indiana passed this so-called Religious Freedom Act. Astonishingly, and this makes twice, by the way, in the past 3 weeks. Astonishingly, the Washington Post. Who owns the Washington Post now? Isn't it Jeff Bezos? Yeah, Amazon. Jeez, of course. Well, I don't know if he has any say over the editorial content. But a couple of weeks ago, the Washington Post went with this, amazing story and headline about Hillary Clinton's hiding emails, self-server in her own bedroom in a Chappaqua. Oh my God, she can't be pressed. Well, yeah, I'm slightly exaggerating, but the essence of the story was that somehow Hillary Clinton had done this and nobody had ever done such a thing before. It turns out Jeb Bush, when he was governor of Florida, not only used jeb@jeb.org as one of his principal email addresses with which he did state business, but, the records laws require that you turn those things over after you leave. It took him 8 years. It took Hillary Clinton a few months or less than a year. And somehow the newspapers didn't emphasize that or mention that in the headlines. Maybe it's buried in the story. I don't know. So anyhow, it happened again. There are 19 states, I believe. There's a bunch of states anyway, that have these so-called Religious Freedom Acts. In fact, Neil McCabe is going to be on in the second hour trying to defend these things. And the essence of the law in theory is that the government can't restrain you in your practice of your religion. Now, this is kind of silly that these are being passed by the states because, the Establishment Clause, the First Amendment, prevent the government from either providing a test, not the Establishment Clause. What's it called? Yeah, it's the Establishment Clause. Yeah. No test for public office shall be based on religion, number one. That's in the Constitution itself. And then the First Amendment, basically says that the government shall pass no laws forbidding the free expression of religion. But here's where it gets bizarre, is this. Most of these, and there's, you could argue that there is a legitimate case to be made for the state, or even in a civil proceeding, for example, a Catholic church not being sued because they choose not to perform brises or weddings of people who are not Catholic. Or, pick your church, right, or synagogue or whatever it may be. But that's not really what this is about. You'll recall up until, 78 or 87, or sometime back in that day, the Mormon church did not allow African-Americans to become quote, priests. Every man in the Mormon church, essentially, is a priest. So you couldn't become a full member because blackness was the mark of Cain. It was in their religion. It's in the Book of Mormon, I believe. If not, if it's in one of the commentaries. And so that was their liberty, right? Their religious liberty, discriminating against black people. Well, what happened was that kind of got blown up for the Mormons because federal law, and as well as many state laws, said you can't discriminate against people based on their race. In many of the states where there are these religious freedom laws, and I put those in quotes, there are protected classes of people who are essentially exempted from those. In other words, you can discriminate against somebody based on whether they're not wearing shoes when they come into your restaurant, right? Perfectly legal. You could put a sign in the front window of the restaurant that says, no shoes, no shirt, no service. Nobody's going to stop you. But you can't put a sign in the front window of a restaurant that says, no Jews. No Catholics. No gay people. Well, actually, you can. In Indiana. Right now. And the reason why this story in the Washington Post is so disingenuous, and the entire debate that's happening on that happened on television over this last weekend, most of which, well, all of which I missed because I was on airplanes all weekend, but I've gone back and listened to pieces of it and certainly read the articles about it. The reason it was so disingenuous is it doesn't point out that in those other states, and as far as I know, all of them, perhaps it's just most of them, gay people are a protected class. So if you are allowed to discriminate against people who don't wear shoes into your restaurant, that's fine. You could even do that arguably because it's your religion that everybody should wear shoes. But you can't do it because they're gay. You can't do it because they're black. You can't do it because they're female. You can't do it because of their particular religion. Except in Indiana. Indiana does not have this carve-out. Indiana does not have a specific law that protects the rights of LGBT people. And therefore, any business in Indiana, and I want to get into more detail on this in a second, and lay out exactly what a person is, any person in Indiana, which is a pretty expensive, can discriminate. Do we have time to play a clip? Barely. Here's Mike Pence over the weekend squirming.
So this is a yes or no question. Is Advance America right when they say a florist in Indiana can now refuse to serve a gay couple without fear of punishment?
Well, let me explain to you the purpose of this bill.
So yes or no, if a florist in Indiana refuses to serve a gay couple at their wedding, is that legal now in Indiana?
George, this is where this debate has gone.
It said it would protect a Christian florist against any kind of punishment. Is that true or not?
George, look, the issue here is, you know, is tolerance a two-way street or not?
Does that mean that Christians who want to refuse service, or people of any other faith who want to refuse service to gays and lesbians, that it's now legal in the state of Indiana? That's a simple yes or no question.
George, the question here is...
One fix that people have talked about is simply adding sexual orientation as a protected class under the state civil rights laws. Will you push for that?
I will not push for that.
Do you think it should be legal in the state of Indiana to discriminate against gays or lesbians?
George,
it's a yes or no question.
Come on, Hoosiers don't believe in discrimination.
Yeah, right. There's no bigots in Indiana. Got a great ad for you coming up.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Plus, you know, I've been gone for a week. If there's anything you want to talk about, give me a shout. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Doug in Oregon, Illinois. I didn't know there was an Oregon, Illinois. Is it pronounced Oregon or Oregon, Doug?
No, it's Oregon.
Oh, great. Hey, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's up?
Well, Oregon's 15 miles from Ronald Reagan's hometown.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, what I wanted to talk to you about was the fact that the human species is the only animal that has belief systems, the concept of belief.
Maybe.
Well, I was listening to a discussion on NPR a few weeks ago, and this one professor was talking about it, and, you know, the whole concept of belief in itself is kind of, you know, a non-tangible thing that you can put your own specific rules and regulations to.
Yeah, well, if I can riff on that a little bit. Number one, a lot of our religions and a lot of our, quote, belief systems are you know, early and in some cases very primitive attempts to explain things that we now understand by science. Why do people get struck by lightning? Why do people die? Why do people get sick? You know, why did that earthquake happen? Those kind of things. So there was a functional purpose at some point in time, and there still is to some extent, and but it's in most places being replaced by religion. Number two, there is this thing, this transcendental experience that is associated with religion for probably most, certainly some people, and that has some value. Now, to your original point of animals, non-human animals, having belief systems, fascinating work. I mean, go back and read Jane Goodall's work and some of the other anthropological work on primates in the wild. And there's an insane amount of tribalism. I mean, two chimp troops that come into contact with each other will kill each other. So you've got that. Plus, behaviors can be taught. Now, to whether those behaviors raise themselves to the level of belief systems, I don't know. But I would suspect that even the higher primates, and maybe, I mean, you know, I've got dogs and cats, and they clearly in their brains come up with these associative mechanisms that may or may not be true. You know, like, you know, hey, if Louise walks into the kitchen, that means food's coming. That's a belief system, right?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah. You know, it's just that,
The thing is that they don't have belief systems. Well, maybe they do, actually. The problem with the belief systems we're talking about here right now, Doug, are that they are exclusive rather than inclusive. They are, we are us, they are them, and not only that, we are better than them, and not only that, that justifies our trashing them, discriminating against them, or in an extreme case, like in Germany in the 30s, killing all of them. Okay. Or not even Germany in the 30s, right today in Afghanistan.
Well, belief systems have caused tragedies for thousands of years.
Right.
You know, there's no doubt about that. I just, you know, to try and imagine life without the belief system, you know, it's justifying the mysteries of life. Okay. It's hard for people to comprehend the immensity of life and everything that goes with it.
Sure.
You know, and everybody wants answers, and they choose to go to a non-tangible for answers.
Yeah. No, I got it. Good point. Good points all, Doug. Thank you very much for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. We will be right back 20 minutes past the hour. What is the, you know, let's talk religion for a second, okay? Let's have an honest conversation, the conversation that we're not hearing in the media about religion. Everybody's throwing, in fact, specifically about Christianity. Everybody's throwing these words around. Mike Pence, George Stephanopoulos, you know, everybody. Oh, religious freedom, religious. What are the teachings of Christianity with regard to gay people? What are they doing? What are the fundamental teachings to begin with? There's a great clip from the Citizens Corporation. It says, "Dear conservative religious people, how exactly does same-sex marriage or a woman's access to birth control infringe on your religious liberty? Do the choices of others prevent you from feeding the poor, housing the homeless, fighting for better lives for the elderly or veterans? calling for peace, demanding that corporations stop polluting the earth? If so, how? We will wait. So will Jesus. Signed, Sane America. Okay, I'm debating whether getting into a long rant about Matthew 25 here. Probably won't. Anyway, as used in this chapter, person includes the following. This is Section 7 of Senate Enrolled Act 101, State of Indiana. Mike Pence signed it. Former right-wing talk show host Mike Pence, now governor of Indiana. The Religious Freedom Restoration. Yes, we need to restore religious freedom. To whom? Well, to people. So who are those people? As used in this chapter, person includes the following. An individual or religious society or church. A partnership. A limited liability corporation. A corporation. A company. A firm. A joint stock company. Really? See, this is the essence of the entire thing. This goes back to this insanity that was promulgated by John Chandler Bancroft Davis back in 1880, wrote the decision from the 1886 Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad case, in which in the head note, even though the Supreme Court decision said, we did not decide this case based on whether or not persons in the 14th Amendment includes corporations. We did not. We were able to find the solution to the problem of tax, property tax, which is what the case was about, property tax between Santa Ana and Santa Clara County in California. We were able to find that in the Constitution of the state of California. It had nothing to do with any of this other stuff. But nonetheless, in the headnote, in the commentary on that decision, the clerk of the court, Chandler Bancroft Davis, wrote that the Chief Justice, Morrison Remick Waite, had said, nobody disputes the corporations or persons. Well, yeah, Waite did say that early on in the discussions. And what he was talking about was that they had the right to sue or be sued, to own property, to enter into contracts. Corporations are persons. They're artificial persons. We have always historically referred to human beings as natural persons. The word natural is missing from the 14th Amendment, and that, you can draw a direct line from that. And Senator Conklin running around the United States in the late 1880s and early 1890s on the paycheck of the railroads. He was on the committee that wrote the 14th Amendment saying, oh, yeah, we intended to include the railroads in that. He was lying. He was well paid, but he was lying. So here we have this law that says that, you know, corporations can discriminate against individuals. Which raises some interesting questions. John Moyers is writing over at Alternet. He says, the following is not a snark. It's an honest and practical inquiry. How are merchants in Indiana going to determine which customers can now be refused service under the state's new religious liberty law? I mean, this is a law that targets gays, right? And and I'll play this ad for you after the next break, and then we'll pick up your phone calls. He says, take sexual identity. Every LGBT person out there, if every LGBT person out there was a flamboyant drag queen, it might be easier for a merchant to decide who to refuse. But some gay people like me are just average white guys. I don't swish, lisp, or call everyone honey. And if there's a song on my lips, it's more likely Jerry Garcia than Judy Garland. I mean, how are they going to know? What's the next step? Stop everybody at the door and ask them? Stop everybody at the door and show them some gay porn and see if they get aroused? Maybe the government should step in and do some sort of careful evaluation of people's behavioral history. You guys got into this thing Google last week, didn't you, about how Google knows everything about you? Have you ever Googled the term gay? Ho-ho! And then we can have nice little yellow stars that you wear if you're... Oh, has that already been done? I'm surprised George Stephanopoulos didn't ask Mike Pence about that. How do you know who's gay? Oh, because of the yellow star they're wearing. It was a pink star, actually, wasn't it? It was the pink star, or it was the pink something or other. in Nazi Germany for the gay, because they were killing gays. Hitler was killing gays too.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
I think I just broke what's-his-name's law, you know, Goodwin's law. Whoever mentions Hitler loses the argument. But you get my point. We'll be back. Welcome back. Time for our Borowitz Report, with thanks to Andy Borowitz. The Borowitz Report. Indiana Governor Mike Pence is stunned and amazed that so many people appear to have gay friends, Pence has confirmed. Speaking to reporters in his office in Indianapolis, Pence said that he made the astonishing discovery about gay friends late last week. Quote, a lot of everyday people have gay friends, and they're not afraid to call and or email you to tell you that, Pence said. To be honest, I'm still trying to process it all. Pence has said that from what he's been able to gather so far, the phenomena of ordinary folks having gay friends has apparently been going on for years. You could be walking down the street, and without you knowing it, this person is friends with gays. And that person is, too, he said. It really seems pretty widespread. It's the darndest thing, he added. While Pence acknowledged that he has no gay friends personally, the growing popularity of being friends with gays has made him question whether he's been missing the boat on this. Said Mike Pence, when I see so many people having gay friends, it makes me wonder if I should go out and get one. But I guess that would be kind of hard for me to do now. Yeah. Yeah. And what? And back to John Moyer's piece in Alternate, you know, about these businesses that want to discriminate against gay people. Again, how do you know? He adds, you know, what's a God-fearing Indiana merchant to do if I walk in the door? This is a guy who doesn't, you know, act in, quote, stereotypically gay or whatever the phrase is. You know, the old Hollywood, I suppose Liberace, what's the word? The cliche of being gay. He says, complicating things is the fact that some straight men are a bit effete and some straight women are kind of butch. Just because God made them that way doesn't mean their dry cleaning should be turned away. So perhaps maybe Indiana now needs a law requiring ID cards for all citizens. Yellow for the heteros, pink for the homos. To protect both the souls and the profits of full faith, freedom-loving Chamber of Commerce members. Right. This, what's the group that put this ad together? Troy? Internet Action Force put together this hysterical ad that's got 250,000 views on YouTube. I'm going to play it, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. Here, it's just 30, 40 seconds. Here it is.
Indiana is the crossroads of America, home to the Indianapolis Colts, the Indy 500, the world-class cities of Indianapolis and Bloomington, and that Hoosier hospitality that makes everyone welcome, especially bigots. Whether you're a family of bigots, a couple of bigots, or just an individual bigot, you can explore Indiana Dunes State Park, tour the covered bridges of Park County, and shame and humiliate people who are different from you to your heart's content. Indiana, it's a great place to be a bigot. Paid for by the Indiana Board of Terrible People.
The new slogan for their license plates, right? Indiana, a great place to be a bigot. I love it. Arif in Rochester, New York. Am I saying your name right, Arif?
Yes, sir. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Well, you got the most intelligent talk show, first of all. I come from a Muslim world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the States 50 years now, and I tell you, I enjoy every freedom of religion, practicing, you know, Islamic religion and all that, so I don't know why we need these laws, okay? And these guys never give you a straight answer when you ask what this law is.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to ask, what I wanted to raise with you is, let's say Sharia law, now under, these guys hate all these Muslims or, you know, Sharia, so should we have Sharia? People want to practice Sharia laws and have a restaurant, and you walk in with your gal, and she doesn't wear a hijab, TV won't serve you. Or so, how far does it take? You know.
Well, that's interesting. That's very interesting, because I don't know where the boundary lines are written, particularly with regard to Indiana, on what is and what isn't religious practice. I doubt that they would turn away a woman wearing a hijab or a man, a Jewish man wearing a kippah, you know, a yarmulke, or a Muslim man wearing, what's the little hat that Muslim men wear? I forget the name of it. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's.
Well, I was thinking of just the opposite. A Muslim restaurant stopped, refused to serve.
So if you opened a restaurant and you're a Muslim and you can say no Christians welcome.
Well, if you're not wearing a hijab, you're not welcome. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Very interesting. It's going to be, you know, there's a lot of shaking out that's got to happen here. It's like we've gone through this process up until the 1930s in the United States. There was a slight religious revival around the 1810s to the 1830s. But by and large, from the 1770s until the 1930s, religious tolerance was pretty high on the list of American priorities. And then in the 1930s, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce got in bed with a bunch of right-wing evangelicals, and it just sort of started in the late 30s as a blowback against FDR, trying to find groups that they could collaborate with to oppose the New Deal. And by the 1950s, they had actually gone out of their way and hired people, started sponsoring people. Billy Graham was the most prominent of them. Franklin Graham, his bigot son, continues the tradition. And these, quote, religious leaders then, I mean, it's amazing what they did in the first 6-7 years of the 1950s. They got In God We Trust on our coins. They got it on our dollars. They got the U.S. motto. They got it in the Pledge of Allegiance. And largely in the 70 years since then, 60 some odd years since then, people think that that's the way America's always been. It's not. And how far do we go? Where do we go with this? What does this lead to? This is crazy. We really need to go back to, you know, I think it was James Madison wrote that letter about the separation of church and state. Maybe it was Jefferson, but I'm pretty sure it was Madison. We really need to go back to saying, you know, religion is religion, and the state's job is to keep the roads running, you know, and the traffic lights on. Arif, thank you so much for the call. Great to hear from you. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Tom. Before I make my comments, I want to thank everybody, the Tom Hartman Show listeners who came to the forum on Social Security on Saturday.
How'd that go?
It was terrific. I was delighted beyond, well, I shouldn't say beyond words, or I would have been unable to speak. But, you know, we had, it wasn't a huge group, but the room was full. There were no seats, and a few people were standing. So I really couldn't have gone any better, and I want to thank all of you and each of you for coming. Thank you so much for making that a successful event.
That's wonderful, Paul. I'm glad it worked for you. So you want to talk about Mike Pence?
Yeah. You know, Mike Pence, first of all, I'm gonna pull a Barack Obama here and say, this isn't about religion. This isn't about Christianity, just like this terrorism isn't about Islam. This isn't about Christianity. This is about discrimination and the people wanting to have the right to discriminate. Mike Pence whining about the rest of the country not understanding their law, I would suggest that, Mike, the people in your own state, businesses in your own state don't understand your law. Otherwise, they wouldn't be putting signs in their window that say, we serve everybody.
Right.
Why would you put a sign in your window if that weren't something that was an issue?
Right.
And then I have to wonder then, if you are a business that doesn't have a sign in your window that says, we serve everybody, should I presume that you don't serve everybody? Or do I look for signs that say, this proprietor is not a sinner? You know,
right.
It's like, I mean, this is, you know, it's ridiculous. So it is about discrimination, and I think the people of Indiana are demonstrating that by simply having, by even putting signs like that in their window.
Yeah, people get it. I don't think there's any ambiguity here at all. I think people absolutely get it, Paul.
Well, you have to wonder what religious freedoms are under attack in Indiana, where obviously a majority of the legislature representing a majority of the people and the governor signed this law. But how would they, you know, Indiana being the fundamentalist Christian state that it is, what religious freedoms are, when you look at the Religious Freedoms Restoration Act of 1993, the federal law,
right,
that was meant to deal with the Native American tribes that were the infringement of their practice to use peyote in their religious services.
Right.
A religious freedom was under attack.
It
was the Native Americans wanting to use peyote in their religious services. But what's come, what is the recent, the the new excuse since Hobby Lobby is that my life is my religious practice, even when I'm running my business.
Right.
And to say that religious practice is, even in the marketplace, it's religious practice.
Right. This is obscene.
Which is ridiculous, because you enter the marketplace at your own free will.
Right. It's voluntary.
And, yeah.
By and large.
That
argument is being flipped around, Paul. Too the Mike Pences of the world are saying, well, you know, you don't have to patronize a business that is run by bigots.
Okay, then why is he complaining? I'm saying let the free market let's do what the free.
Well, here's the problem, Paul. There is no such thing as a free market.
Well, I know, but he's saying that the free market will take care of this, and I must say, I wrote a company that I ordered some of my musical instruments from. I emailed them yesterday and said, I'm sorry, I won't be purchasing from your company anymore. And I also put into the email that it may not be your company that engages in these sorts of policies. Probably not. But you know what you need to do? You need to get your state house in order.
Is your supplier in Indiana?
Yep.
Uh-huh. And a lot of that is going on. I mean, you know, from Apple to, well, I don't know if Apple's actually made a policy. Tim Cook has certainly come out and written a great op-ed on this. But a number of companies are just saying, okay, and in fact, some states, we will no longer pay for official travel to Indiana. And Mike Pence is taking some serious, former right-wing talk show host, Mike Pence is taking a lot of crap for this. Hang on.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Pardon me. You can tell I've been on vacation for a week. I shouldn't use language like that. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Ed in Belfair, Washington. Hey, Ed. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. My comment is about when they come back and clarify the bill.
Right.
I'm hoping what they put in it is that what they are clarifying is that all religions are welcome to Indiana, that mosques, temples, and even more churches are all welcomed into the state, and there won't be any bigotry. What they are doing, in fact, is welcoming all religions into the state.
Well, I understand, Ed, and I agree with you. However, I think you're missing a really important point here. What this law says and what Mike Pence is promoting, and it's not just Mike Pence. I mean, there's a whole movement behind this thing. You know, you got the family, and Jeff Charlotte wrote about this, these guys, the E Street thing here in D.C. and all this other stuff. What they're saying is that the individual behavior of a customer might violate the religious belief of a store owner, and therefore the store owner has the right, based on the behavior of the customer, which is not happening in front of him. It's the behavior that that customer does at home in his own bedroom or wherever, that the behavior of that customer provides the store owner with a legal rationale to discriminate against the customer. So it has nothing to do with churches coming or going. It has to do with individual behavior of individuals, which may or may not have anything to do with religion whatsoever. Whether somebody has sex or even falls in love with somebody, I don't see as a religious issue. But these bigots, these religious bigots say, oh, but I'm offended by, my religion is offended by that. Making sense?
No, I understand completely. That's the way I thought the bill was written also. And I'm sure it is. It's meant to be bigotry.
Yeah.
I was saying that just as a smart aleck.
Yeah, okay, and, great. Because essentially what they're saying is that you as a business owner, through the instrument of your corporation, LLC, whatever it may be, or the LLC itself, apparently can have a religion. I mean, if you go back to the Citizens United logic, and that religion can be offended by not just the behavior of another person, but the mere presence of another person, and therefore they can refuse to give them, you know, service. And doing business in America is a privilege. It's not a right. You apply for a business license in the United States. It can be turned down.
Well, my comment to all the Indiana residents would be, each time you go into a store, whether you're gay or lesbian or whatever you are, after you purchase a product, say thank you very much for selling to a gay person, or say thank you, whether you are or not.
Right.
And then you'll get the right idea. Then the people there will start getting the right idea. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It really doesn't matter.
That's interesting. Start a campaign in India. What if everybody in Indiana declared that they were gay?
I know, that'd be great.
It's something you could probably mobilize millennials around it. I mean, you know, start a massive Twitter campaign. I don't know, did Danielle get this thing going? Everybody in Indiana, every time you walk into a store, the first words out of your mouth as you go through the door are, I'm gay, can I come in?
Perfect.
We'll see where this goes. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. You know, a very thoughtful point. Great to hear from you. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Before the hour, I am going to get to Matthew 12. I'm going to do it in the second hour. But, you know, what essentially what this law says is that a business is a person. A business as a person can have a religion. That religion can have beliefs associated with it about what's acceptable and unacceptable. And that religion can discriminate against somebody, not because they're behaving in an unacceptable fashion in the business or with the business or for the business, but because they do it at home. Do you get how convoluted this logic is? I mean, how do they know? Unless somebody shows up, you know, with in full gay stereotype or cliche or whatever the appropriate word is, but you know, and even then, I mean, this is, you know, one of the points that that John Moyers makes in his argument, in his article. Louise and I used to have an employee years and years ago. I don't want to go into too much detail, but we had an employee. He was married. He had three kids. If you met this guy, you would say this is the gayest guy on the planet. I mean, you know, all the stereotypes. He lisped. He had he dropped his wrist all the time. It was just right out of the 50s. And yet this guy was as straight as far as I know. I mean, maybe he was a gay guy in the closet. I don't think so. I mean, I've worked with him for 2 years. I'm pretty reasonable gaydar, I suppose. I just, you know, there are some guys who are a little more feminine than others. There are some women who are a little more butch than others. And is that now going to be the new definition? I mean, you know, is my friend Bill going to have to bring his wife and two kids with him when he goes to a restaurant and say, no, here's our wedding certificate. Yes, I may talk like this, but I'm sorry. I shouldn't even try to do a lisp. It's not being gay myself. I'm dancing around the edge of perhaps hurting somebody's feelings. My apologies. But anyhow, you get my point. What the hell are they thinking? Jack in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Hey, Jack, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
As far as I know, there is no major religion that requires this type of discrimination against people that you think may be sinning somehow.
Right.
There is, you know, so the ability to...
Well, hang on just a second, Jack. There are major religions, including Christianity, if you accept the Old Testament, that require putting people to death for behaving in ways that the Ten Commandments say, if your kids talk back to you, kill them. Back to you.
Okay. But, you know, I was raised Catholic, and nowhere were we ever told that you do not interact in any way with people that that are not of your religion, that
unless it's to kill them,
have been sinning somehow.
Unless it's to kill them. I mean, read the Book of Joshua.
We got away from the Old Testament stuff
right.
Long ago.
And I don't think Mike Pence is suggesting that store owners in Indiana should be killing gay people.
Right, right. So the issue is legally, you know, can anybody claim that their religion requires that they do not interact with anybody that they think might be sinning?
Right.
Against precepts of the religion.
Right.
And so therefore, you know, my feeling is that if you went, you know, religion by religion, and you went to Catholics or Lutherans, you know, whoever and ever, and asked them, okay, does your dogma require that you do not interact with somebody that you think is sinning, you know, they would come back and say, well, no. Mm. You know, we don't require that our members do not interact in any way with sinners. So the ability to say that my religion requires that I do not sell you or provide you the services and so on, that I am licensed, you know, that I have a license or an LLC or whatever to do, you know, it would be interesting whether that would pass a legal test by saying, well, I am required to do this by my particular religion.
Right.
What they would have to do is say, well, my religion doesn't require it, but my own personal interpretation of what my religion is does require it. And right. I don't know how far that would go.
Right.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, I have not heard, you know, like the Pope say that businesses should not serve gay people, even though the official position of the Catholic Church is that gay behavior is a sin. I mean, this most recent Pope has clarified that somewhat, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin. Well, that's an old cliche, actually. But, yeah, I get your point. Very well said. And I don't consider any of it a sin. But, Jack, thank you. Excellent point. Brian in Shaker Heights, Ohio. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, yeah, thanks. I think everybody's going a little crazy over this law here. I mean, have you actually read it, Tom?
Yeah, I actually have it right here. Hang on just a second. Or is there a part that you wanted to point out to me? Here, Senate Enrolled Act 101. I have it in my hand.
Read Section 8A.
Section 8. Let's see. There's Section 9, Section 8. Section A. Except as provided in Subsection B, a governmental entity may not, now that's the important thing, a governmental entity. In other words, the state of Indiana can't discriminate. May not substantially burden a person's exercise of religion, even if the burden results from the rule of general applicability. What does that have to do with stores?
The whole point is, this is once again the left trying to find a victim here.
No, it's not. Section 9 says a person whose exercise of religion has been substantially burdened. And then it goes on to say, who the hell is a person? A person is a partnership, a limited liability company. This is from Chapter 9, Section 3, Section 7. Paragraph 3, a partnership, a limited liability company, a corporation, a company, a firm, a society.
But
when did these organizations get religions?
The only thing this law does is increases the level of scrutiny when religious liberties are involved. You know, Tom, I've heard you many times. I know you know better that this does not per se allow any of the stuff that you're talking about. All it does is it puts a heightened level of scrutiny to there has to be.
No, you're flipping it upside down, Brian. What it does is it says that the highest level of burden. What's the phrase, Shane? Strict scrutiny. The highest level of burden has to be applied to demonstrate that you are not discriminating, as opposed to the other way around. It makes it much harder for a person to claim discrimination rather than much easier. You've got it backwards, Brian. With apologies, read the law. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I think. Indeed, here I am. And our old friend Neil McCabe is on the line with us, conservative columnist, townhall.com, editor of the Washington Mercury News site, thewashingtonmercury.com. Thank you, Daniel. And Dr. McCabe, welcome back to the program.
Excited, Tom.
Nice to have you with us. So how, you know, I understand that there are, you know, more than a few conservatives out there who are concerned about Mike Pence and his future. Now, the interesting photo, there's a photo of Mike Pence signing the anti-gay law, and there's a bunch of lobbyists standing behind him. He refuses to identify who they are, so the photo has now been published, and one of them is Micah Clark. He believes homosexuality is a treatable disorder, publicly raged against a lesbian high school student over a prom tux. Another is Kurt Smith. He equates homosexuality with bestiality and adultery, helped write the bill. Eric Miller distributed a fear flyer claiming that pastors could be jailed for preaching against homosexuality. What's going on here?
I'm not sure. Are we talking about the religious freedom bill in Indiana?
Yes, sir.
Because what I think Governor Pence was trying to do is there was a federal law signed by President Clinton that the Supreme Court ruled
no.
did not
Sorry,
apply
Mike.
To the
Sorry,
state.
Neil. No,
and
that
it did not.
That law had to do with Indians using peyote. It had nothing to do with homosexuality.
Like conscience.
Just because it has the word religious in it. Go ahead.
Well,
I'm sorry. I'm interrupting you.
No, but the federal attempts to preserve conscience have been blocked, and so the states have gone ahead to preserve conscience on their own.
That's nonsense.
I think where it came up is that. Frankly, Tom, what's happened
These
is,
people are not trying to eat peyote, Neil. This has got nothing to do with Bill Clinton or 1993. This is a law that was written by a bunch of anti-gay lobbyists, is signed into law by Mike Pence, a former right-wing talk show host, that basically says that businesses in Indiana, A, are persons, B, can have religions, and as part of their religion, they can refuse to serve gay people. I can't find that in the New Testament, but maybe it's there.
Well, I mean, I think you can't compel someone to do something. I mean, I was going to talk to
yes,
you about
Federalist 10. You
I
absolutely can, Neil. You absolutely can. If you refuse to stop for a red light, a police officer can compel you to do so.
And so if a man comes into a Jewish deli wearing an SS uniform, he must be served. And if they refuse to serve him, you would lock them in jail.
What does an SS uniform have to do with religion?
Well, what if
there are laws, Neil, in every state in the union, there are laws against disruptive behavior.
I can find things offensive, whether it has to do with religion or not. And so if someone does not want to participate in, say, a gay wedding, they shouldn't have to be forced to participate.
No, you're talking apples and oranges. There's a world of difference between putting a sign out front that says no shoes, no service, no shirt, no service, gay SS uniform, no service. No problem with that. That's a completely different thing from putting a sign in the window that says if when you're at home, you're sleeping with somebody of the same sex, you can't come in our store.
What's the difference? I mean, why is that a problem, Tom? Why can't, I mean, if I choose to go out of business because of my beliefs, that should be my right. If I'm turning away.
Because of your bigotry?
Well.
Okay, I'll tell you why. You ask a very good question, Neil. Let me answer in what I think is a, you know, rational fashion. We do not have, doing business in the United States is not a right, it is a privilege. You have to apply for a business license. You have to apply to incorporate. You have to agree to conduct yourself according to the rules of the state and the federal government to a certain extent, but mostly the rules of the state if you're going to conduct business. The states say that there are certain things in business that you can't do. You can't any longer say, sorry, only white people at this lunch counter. You can't any longer say, sorry, only white people at this bathroom. You can't. The list goes on and on. And in Indiana, the thing that differentiates Indiana from some of these other states that have these similar so-called religious freedom hate laws is that Indiana does not protect gay people. And when Mike Pence was asked about that, And in fact, we've got a clip of it here. Let me just play. This is.
Well, he said
this,
it wasn't his priority.
Here's exactly what he said, Neil. I took out his filibustering efforts, or Shano did, but here's what Mike Pence had to say.
So this is a yes or no question. Is Advance America right when they say a florist in Indiana can now refuse to serve a gay couple without fear of punishment?
Well, let me explain to you the purpose of this bill.
So yes or no, if a florist in Indiana refuses to serve a gay couple at their wedding, is that legal now in Indiana?
George, this is where this debate has gone.
It said it would protect a Christian florist against any kind of punishment. Is that true or not?
George, look, the issue here is, you know, is tolerance a two-way street or not?
Does that mean that Christians who want to refuse service, or people of any other faith who want to refuse service to gays and lesbians, that it's now legal in the state of Indiana? That's a simple yes or no question.
George, the question here is...
One fix that people have talked about is simply adding sexual orientation as a protected class under the state civil rights laws. Will you push for that?
I will not push for that.
Do you think it should be legal in the state of Indiana to discriminate against gays or lesbians?
George,
it's a yes or no question.
Hoosiers don't believe in discrimination.
Yeah, right. So let's just change the state motto on the license plates, Neil, to welcome bigots.
Well, I mean, you're also running into a problem, Tom, where you have a boycott of a state because people in the state want to boycott other people, right? You know, so people are now saying don't do business with Indiana because now we're prejudiced against and bigotry against all Indianans. I'm reminded, too, that during the Montgomery bus strike, didn't they pass an ordinance that basically was compelling people to ride the bus? I mean, that's certainly not...
Not to the best of my knowledge. They had a long-standing law that went back to the 1880s that said that people had to sit in the back of the bus.
Oh, no, I'm not sorry. They weren't allowed to share rides. That's what it was.
Right.
But they basically, you know, they made efforts to break the strike through ordinances, and this is something that was appalling.
And those were unconstitutional.
Right. So why should we force someone, if I don't want to sell flowers for a gay wedding, why do I have to sell you flowers?
Why do I have to issue you a business license? If I'm the Secretary of State, why do I have to issue you a business license if you want to do a bigoted business?
Because the business license is nowhere in the Federalist Papers, and the business license is nowhere in the Constitution.
And you know why, Neil?
Nobody at Valley Forge is talking about, well, we should probably have a country where you need a business license.
And you know why, Neil?
Why?
Because we fought the American Revolution against the world's largest corporation, the British East India Company. The reason,
boycotted the tea.
Hey, you want to cite the Federalist Papers? Let me instead suggest that you go back and you read Madison's notes from the Constitution, because there was a debate about whether business should be in the Constitution. And the conclusion that they all came to was no, business should not be in the Constitution. Business can be, A, to quote James Madison, a pernicious influence, and B, they felt that it would be best left to the states.
Well, he also called for a commercial republic, Tom, and that was Madison, because your dollar is worth my dollar, and your bigotry is my profit if I choose to exploit it.
Our federal government issuing dollars in 1789.
Well, you may have said shilling, and so I'm sorry for that. But I think the important point, though, Tom,
the states were issuing,
is that if someone wants to turn away business, they should have that right. You are not forced to engage in commerce that you don't want to. I mean,
So you think we should go back to no blacks at this lunch counter?
I absolutely not, and I think...
It's a lot of Mormons who believe that blackness is the sign of Cain. It was the official Mormon doctrine for over 100 years.
I've heard stories about Irish need not apply, too, and somehow we got an Irish president.
Okay. Neil McCabe, conservative columnist, townhall.com, editor of the Washington Mercury News, thewashingtonmercury.com. Thank you, Neil.
Glad to be with you, Tom. Take care.
Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. I am going to share Matthew 25. Yeah, you've heard it all before, but it's worth revisiting, particularly in this context. We'll do it quickly. Stick around. Welcome back. Jody, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Jackson, Georgia. Hey, Jody, what's on your mind?
Not much, man. I just want to reiterate on what Neil said. Please do not tell me that man was wearing a seal from the military on his left shoulder.
Is Neil in active military? I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Okay, because I saw that on his last show, and he sounded very ignorant. The point I'm trying to make here is I live in a small town here, of course, and our superintendent for the school was caught sending messages to another man, and he was engaging in some sexual talk on his cell phone. He was fired from his position because of unreleased information. Now, can you tell me how you would feel about that?
Jody, I don't know any of the details about it, so I can't really.
Well, the thing with me is that the man, the only, they were protesting against him because of his belief of being gay or being, you know, bisexual. They got rid of him. So what it was to say if a military officer decides, okay, I like men, does that mean we can't serve him a beer in our own bar because he served for our country?
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is where it's going. Apparently in Indiana, although gays can serve openly in the military, they can't go into some bars in Indiana. Yeah. That was your point.
Okay, so you can't serve a man who just saved your family's life a beer because he's gay?
Right. According to Mike Pence.
I can't agree with that. And also, I mean, I'm a Christian myself, and I believe in the Bible and in a higher, you know, power, but there's some things in the Bible and there's some things around the world that we'll never understand, and that's one of them. You can't take a certain religion and decide from views then and bring them now, oh, if it's like that then, we're going to be like that now. It doesn't make any sense. Does it make sense to you?
No.
You know, I mean, it to me is blowing my mind, all these ignorant people. They're talking, you're a very intellectual man, and they're trying to be ignorant with you, and it's not working.
No.
This is ignorance. All it is being a bigot, and nobody should have to feel like they have to be straight in order to get a beer or go buy some milk or even walk in a place to get a sandwich. Nobody should feel like they have to be.
Well, and where it gets even more confusing is, you know, this guy writing for Alternet saying, you know, I'm a gay guy, but nobody would know it looking at me. What happens when he walks into the bar? Does the bartender go up to him and say, you know, you seem like a gay guy, but you know, or
I had a friend I was in high school with, and he looked, you know, he had the whole outfit going on, the slang, all of it. It was all going on. But yeah, he dated one of the prettiest girls I've ever met in my high school.
Yeah.
And because he walks into a bar and he looks that way, now he doesn't get a drink.
Right. Right. Yeah. That was my point about my former employee. And you know, there may be some gay men in the closet, and you know, the kind of Larry Craig, Marcus Bachman guys, but who knows? I mean, it's
not our business, really. You know, in all honesty, I'm only 21 years old, and in my opinion, it's none of my business.
Yeah,
I don't care if you like another man or what. I'll still serve you a beer. I'll still have a talk with you. I'm not. To me, it seems like that people have a problem with their own sexuality. In my opinion,
I agree. I think that what we're looking at here are kind of two categories of mostly men, either A, men who are either bisexual or gay and in denial about it, or B, men who are simply really screwed up sexually, insecure sexually. Maybe, I don't know, maybe their penis is too small. God only knows, you know, but they're hysterical about this stuff. And it is a small subgroup of bigots that the Republican Party has decided that they need in order to get enough of a majority that they can pass tax cuts for billionaires. Jody, thanks for the call. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. NationalReport.net, right? A hysterical site. It's the National Report. I just, you know, let you know in advance. And National Report is sort of like the Colbert Show. You know, it's a conservative news site with tongue-in-cheek. And they have just this hysterical story here. It was posted 3 days ago. The headline, Marcus Bachman refused service in Indiana. Store owner assumed he was gay. Now, if you followed the career of Michelle and Marcus Bachman, you know that Marcus Bachman, first of all, spends his life with gay men because he does, quote, gay restorative therapy. So he sits in his office for hours and hours and hours every day, or at least he used to, with gay men trying to talk them into being straight or whatever he's doing with them. Who knows? He also is reputed to buy most of Michelle's clothes and supervise her hair and things like that. So anyhow, here's the story. Marcus Bachman, husband of former Minnesota Congressman Michelle Bachman, unwittingly became the first public face of Indiana's newly enacted Religious Freedom Restoration Act after being refused service at a dress boutique because the store owner assumed he was gay. The Bachmans were visiting the state capitol on Thursday to lend their support to embattled Governor Mike Pence. When the incident occurred, Dorothy Holtz, owner of Dottie's Dress Den, described what happened. The 59-year-old self-described devout Christian citizen said, "I didn't think anything was out of the ordinary at first, although I don't usually have men come in by themselves. He was very polite, but the more he spoke, the more I thought he was different." Holtz began to suspect that Bachman was perhaps a homosexual man. And because it is now within her rights to refuse service based on religious belief, informed Bachman that she would be unable to serve him and asked him to leave. And it goes on from there. "I was aghast," says Bachman. "I've been shopping for Michelle for years. I had no idea why the woman in the store turned on me like that. I thought perhaps she was suddenly become ill." For many years, Marcus has been choosing Michelle's outfits without incident. In a Chicago Tribune article from 2006, Michelle recalled an upcoming meeting with then-Vice President Dick Cheney. Marcus decided to outfit Michelle in a more feminine style than the congresswoman usually chose for herself. That actually, I believe, is pretty solid. Okay, I told you about Matthew 25. This is, please tell me where, you know, because this is all about religious freedom, right? Religious freedom. Where is the religious freedom in this? There is one place in the New Testament, and I realize I'm only talking about one religion here, but you know, we could get on scholars of other religions and have very similar conversations. There's basically only one place in the New Testament where the disciples came to Jesus and said, "How do we get into heaven? What do we do? What does it take?" And he said, this is Matthew 25:31. Okay? He said, "When the Son of Man," that's him, "comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he's going to sit on his glorious throne, and all the nations," not the people, the nations, which in my mind says, you know, are our national laws consistent? But that's a whole other thing. "All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. Because I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me.'" Now, nowhere in there do I see, "And I asked for gay wedding cake and you kicked me out of the store." But in any case, these are the criteria. This is what Jesus says you got to do to get into heaven. He says, "I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I needed clothes, you clothed me. I was sick, you looked after me. I was in prison, you came to visit me." This freaks out the disciples. Right? These 12 guys have been following him around for a couple of years. They've never seen him hungry. They've never seen him thirsty. They've never seen him naked. Well, maybe he took a shower or something, but you know, you get my point. Lacking clothing. They've never seen him in prison. And so they go, "Oh my God, we're not going to go to heaven. We're not going to get to be with Jesus." And in fact, they said to him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger, invite you in, or need clothes and clothing you? When did we see you in prison and go visit you?" Notice it doesn't say, "When did we try to buy a gay wedding cake?" And the king will reply, that's Jesus. Basically, he's saying, chill out. You know, just because I said in order to get to heaven, you have to feed me and you've never fed me, you're not going to go to hell. Don't worry. Jesus says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." Now he's saying this to the sheep, to the good guys. In other words, if you took care of the least among us, what Jesus in Matthew 6, I think it is, the Sermon on the Mount, 6 or 7, refers to as the least of the least. And then he says to those on his left, and I'd like you to think about the Republicans in the House of Representatives who want to throw 29 million people, maybe it's 24 million. I heard Bernie Sanders give a speech on this night before last in Los Angeles. The new Republican budget will throw 24 million people off health insurance. It will decimate Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the whole social safety net. Okay? So here's Jesus, in my opinion, talking to the Republicans. And then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat." Republicans want to dial back on food stamps. "I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in." Republicans want to dial back, do away with, ultimately. Housing for poor people. "I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me." And then they say, "But Lord, you know, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger, and we didn't help you?" And he said, "Truly, I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me." Okay, end of religious rant. But given the fact that this is all in a religious context.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Do you get how a-religious or even anti-religious Mike Pence and the bigots along with him in Indiana are on this? This is a repudiation of Christianity. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, maybe there's a business opportunity here, right? I mean, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I put my business hat on. A lot of Republicans like to think of themselves as, and many of them are entrepreneurs, business people. Maybe there's a business opportunity here. It could kind of backfire. But one of the things that we know is that straight people and gay people tend to respond to porn differently. Although it's really interesting. In other words, you know, straight people get aroused by straight porn, gay people get aroused by gay porn. But what's particularly interesting is there have been a number, this study has been replicated over and over and over again. This is not in dispute. The more homophobic a man is, to the best of my knowledge, these have not been done with women, but the more homophobic a man is, the more likely he is to get aroused by gay porn. So what if we just created a little business opportunity? When people walk into a store, they're asked to kind of step into a box that scans their body. I mean, it doesn't have to be invasive. You don't have to, like, you know, grab hold of them. Right? It can be like the TSA, you know, where there's scanning machines, right? Only it sees everything. And it flashes, you know, 30 seconds of gay porn. And if the person starts getting aroused, you kick them out of the store. Great new business, right? Where's Skeletor when you need him? Michael Hayden, was that? No, not Michael Hayden. What's the guy's name? Who's Skeletor? He was the Chertoff, Michael Chertoff. Yeah, he sells the Chertoff porno x-ray machines to airports. Michael Chertoff, here's a business opportunity for you. Gay detectors. Completely, you know, just they're not human done. They're done by machine. Now, it is going to catch, quote, straight homophobes, but hey, maybe they're gay too. Who knows? I don't know. I'm curious to hear from some of our LGBTQ listeners as well. Anyway, back to your calls on the topic. Richard driving through Utah. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, good day to you, Tom. Welcome back to the show, brother.
Thank you, Richard. Great to be back.
You know, you used the term earlier today, God-fearing, in one of your comments, and it got me to thinking, you know, I grew up in the Catholic Church. You know, my mom sent me to catechism every Saturday. You know, I went to Mass every Sunday. You know, and nowhere really in the religion and in the Bible does it really teach you to hate gays.
Right.
But it always winds up in the interpretation of whoever the minister is of the congregation, just how hateful these people wind up being.
Right.
And it's not so much God that they're fearing anymore. It's their minister that they wind up being in fear of, because he's the one who's teaching them.
Right. And then there's a social pressure associated with that, because there's everybody in the congregation and they're presumably agreeing with the minister, or he wouldn't be the minister anymore. And so you don't want to offend them either.
Exactly. So, you know, I think the term God-fearing is the wrong term for stuff like that.
Right.
I think it's more in fear of the religious leadership.
Right.
These people throughout history, whenever you look at religious leadership, you know, they've always played this game in order to control the masses that they have power over so that they can maintain their positions of authority and control. It never had anything to do with the actual religions.
Yeah, I agree. And so instead of calling it God-fearing, we should call it authority-fearing, for example.
Yeah, and I wanted to make one quick comment on this Indiana law. You know, I would be like, if I was anybody other than a Christian, I'd start hanging signs up in my windows, no Christians allowed.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. But except the Christians... Christians are a protected class. Now, if gay people could somehow get written into law that being gay is a religion, suddenly problem solved. But that's not, you know, that's not going to be the case.
How are Christians protected over any other religious factor? I thought it was religious protection, not necessarily Christianity.
This is how the Republicans do things so disingenuously. I had a conversation with a Democratic politician in California about this on Saturday, and we were talking about how they name laws, you know, and like George W. Bush named the law that let more air pollution into the air, the Clean Skies Act. He named the law that let more pollution into the water, the Clean Water Act. The Democrats, on the other hand, came up with a law to protect children's health insurance, and it's called the S-CHIP program. And I said, you know, S-CHIPs are things that I avoid avoid when I walk through cow patties. You know, it's like, why can't you guys come up with a decent law, name for a law? And the name of this law is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act or something. Yeah, Senate enrolled. Let's see. I've got it right here in my hand. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And so really what they're saying is that it has to do with religion. Well, it doesn't. It has to do with bigotry.
Yeah, well, it's all basically rebranding. It's like when with the inheritance tax, they renamed it the death tax,
right,
in order to scare people away from it.
Right, and the right to life movement. I mean, it's he who controls, or she, in the, as the case may be, who controls the frame controls the argument. And you're spot on right. The frame here has bizarrely shifted to religion, and people are asserting that, you know, in Hobby Lobby, it's my religion not to provide my female employees with birth control. And in this case in Indiana, it's my religion not to serve gay people. And the big question, I think, half tongue in cheek, but half real, is how do you know? How do you know? I mean, there's an enormous number of gay people who are not, instantly, obviously gay. And but beyond that, I mean, that's sort of the practical stuff. There's a fundamental issue here of honesty and fairness and acceptance and tolerance within our society. The group of people in the United States at greatest risk for suicide are gay teenagers. And this kind of law slaps them right upside the face one more time, kicks them in the stomach one more time. This is not only wrong, it's not only religiously wrong, it's not only legally wrong, it is morally wrong. This is a fundamentally immoral act that is going to lead to more young people committing suicide and destroy more lives. And Mike Pence and his Republican hate buddies need to be held to account for that, in my opinion. Richard, thank you for the call. Brian in Matthews, North Carolina. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, Professor. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You have an outstanding crew there, believe me.
I do. I do. I thank Shano and Danielle, or Danielle and Shano, so much for filling in for me last week. They did a spectacular job. I was constantly getting positive feedback from people. It was great. Thank you.
Yes. My take on today, especially with the I've been trying to offer a book for like 15 years regarding this intention. Well, the title was going to be Intentions Interpretation. Some time ago, a gentleman had called and asked you to read Section 8 of the law in or whatever. And that was just a classic example right there. He interpreted it one way because he wanted to believe one way, so it makes you blind, it makes you less what's the term I'm looking for? But anyway, you're not as receptive. There you go. You're not as receptive, so you believe any way you want to believe. If it's clearly written, why do we take it and want to tailor it another way and advance another copy?
Right. Well, and the thing that he was totally missing, and that the Washington Post, I believe, was missing, was Section 9 of the law. It says a person whose exercise of religion has been substantially burdened or is likely to be substantially burdened by a violation of this chapter. In other words, a person who wants to discriminate and may be forced not to discriminate may assert the violation or impending violation as a claim or defense in a judicial or administrative proceeding, regardless of whether the state or any other body, governmental entity, is party to the proceeding. In other words, you can claim discrimination based on religion as an affirmative defense in court. What this does is it eliminates the ability of gay people to sue.
Yeah, but we have the same problem, same issues with the Bible, which is another problem.
Yeah.
We always want to take it, tailor it, fashion it any way you want, and assert it forward.
Yeah, but this law is not ambiguous. This law cannot be interpreted 16 different ways. There's one simple interpretation of this law. If you as a corporation or as an individual assert that your religion requires you to refuse to take the money of gay people, under this law, you can do that. Just like in 1953 in Alabama, if your religion asserted that you should not take the money of black people if they wanted to sit at your lunch counter, you could refuse to do that.
Mm-hmm. But the other problem is that it's showing you their intent.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't matter if the law is successful or not. Their intent is to do this, which shows you their state of mind. We have to be aware.
Yeah.
We must be aware.
And the big thing that most Americans are missing, Brian, and this is going to be absent from all corporate mainstream media about this, is the point that I keep making, that the Republican Party is made up of three groups of people. It's made up of rich people, it's made up of the paid shills and spokespeople for rich people, and it's made up of suckers. And in order to get a large enough group of suckers to vote for Republicans so that they can have power, they have to reach out to a whole different, you know, a whole variety of different individual sucker groups. And one of those sucker groups is the racists. Another one is the homophobes, which is what this law is all about. Another is the gun nuts. Another is the, you know, and you go on through the list. Another one is the people who fear people of color, people who dislike women, the misogynists. So this is really, ultimately, in my mind, it's all about the money. It's about Republican control. Brian, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I say it's all about the money because when Republicans get enough suckers, anti-gay suckers, to vote for them, what do the Republicans do? They cut the taxes of rich people. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Tom, I was wondering, what about this law in Indiana? What, say a Southern Baptist Bible thumper pulls out his Bible and says, well, the races are supposed to be kept separate, so I'm going to hang a sign in my window that says whites only.
See, that's superseded by federal law. You could do that in 1963 or 64, but you couldn't do that in 1965 or 66 because the Federal Civil Rights Act said that people of color were a protected class. In other words, you can no longer discriminate against people based on the color of their skin.
What's to prevent them from standing on state law and saying, well, state law applies, and like the marijuana thing. Now, it's going to be a class one drug in the rest of the country, but in Oregon in a couple of months, it's going to be perfectly legal because of state law.
Right, right.
What's to stop them from doing it in Indiana?
I believe that every state, I may be wrong, it may be just virtually every state, has laws on their books that more or less reflect the Civil Rights Acts of the 60s and in some cases the Civil Rights Act of 1866 that say that you cannot discriminate against people based on their gender, on their religion. There's been a long fight to no discrimination based on gender. I mean, the Equal Rights Amendment still has not been passed. And you cannot discriminate against people based on their skin color, or on their race, on their national origin, or on their religion. What it doesn't say is you can't discriminate against people based on their sexual orientation. Many states have laws that say you can't discriminate against people based on their sexual orientation. Indiana has no such law, and Mike Pence will not support such a law, at least according to his interview with George Stephanopoulos over the weekend. Make sense?
Well, let's hope that Indiana has it written into their constitution and it's not just a state law, because then somebody's going to say that this law supersedes the other state law.
Right, Right. Well, at the moment, it's in neither place, and you got the Republicans controlling the state. So, and as I said, the Republican mantra is, you know, we are the party of the rich, but we need the suckers to vote for us. And, you know, who are the suckers? The Republicans are looking out there at the vast, you know, unwashed masses of America and saying, which suckers can we get to vote for us? Well, we can get the homophobes to vote for us. We can get the bigots to vote for us. We can get the anti, you know, and we can get the gun nuts, you know, the guys with small penises to vote for us. We can, on the list goes, right? And this is just one more thing. This is one more effort on their part. And former right-wing talk show host like Mike Pence, you know, would be a master at this, would know this stuff, and obviously is. Ed, thanks for the call. I got to move along here. Michael in Skokie, Illinois. Just got a minute for the till the break. Michael, quick one.
All right, really quick. Basically, on this Indiana law, actions have consequences. If a business discriminates against the gay people, mark it down, put them on a list, so that other businesses in the state and around the country can stop doing business with that business.
Yeah.
Don't give them loans. Don't give them. Don't sell them eggs for their bakery. Don't provide them with flowers for their florist.
The argument you're making, Michael, is essentially the libertarian so-called free market argument. The problem with it is, you know, if you were talking,
mine is a little different in that where I'm arguing for the progressive nature is, how are these banks going to do this?
Right.
They're not going to just suddenly say, "Well, I think I'll not lend this guy money." Right. No, it has to be up to us to pressure them to say, "We'll take our business from your bank if you don't stand up for what most Americans believe."
In other words, go to your bank and say, "If you're handling the money for bigoted businesses, I'm going to take my money out of your bank."
I don't want to deal with bigots, and so I don't want to deal with people who deal with bigots.
Right. Even two steps or three steps away. I got it. Good one, Michael. Thank you. So let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, and find out what's going on. The news of the day that's brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Victoria Jones on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on? For the last hour and a half, we've been ranting about Mike Pence in Indiana. But is there any news on that? And what else is going on in the world?
Well, the news on that, and I'm sure you're probably up to date on this, is that Indiana's Republican legislative leaders said today that they're working on adding language to the new state law to make it clear that it does not allow discrimination against gays and lesbians. Well, Democrats are countering that a full repeal is the only way to stem the widespread criticism.
Well, here's my question. If they change the law so it doesn't allow discrimination against gays and lesbians, who does it allow discrimination against?
That's a very good question. Senate President Pro Tem David Long says this law does not and will not be allowed to discriminate against anyone.
Right. I mean, there's already federal and state laws against discriminating against people based on their religion. I mean, this is sort of the reverse of that. But, you know, it's...
Well, what the Republican House Speaker Brian Bosma says is what we had hoped for with the bill was a message of inclusion. Inclusion of all religious beliefs.
Excuse me while I fall down laughing. Okay.
What instead has come out as a message of exclusion, and that was not the intent.
Well, if that was not the intent, then why four or five times in a row on George Stephanopoulos' show, when he was asked a yes or no question, Mike Pence, the governor of the state, you know, do you favor discrimination against gays? Is the purpose of this bill to discriminate against gays? Mike Pence refused to answer the question.
Tom, you must have nodded off. It was over six.
Over six times, yes. I didn't see it. I just heard the mashup that Shano did. I was on an airplane most of the day yesterday. But, wow, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Well, one has to ask why he decided to go on the Sunday shows if he wasn't going to answer the question.
Well, because he wants to be president. And he's, you know, he's got an ego larger than this building. I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. It's actually a good question, Victoria. Back to you.
Guards shot one man dead and seriously wounded a second when they tried to ram a vehicle into the entrance gate of the Fort Meade, Maryland headquarters of the National Security Agency today, according to news reports.
Yeah, this is very strange. Who would do such a thing and why?
Well, The men, disguised as women, were apparently in a stolen car, according to NBC News. A guard shot at least one of the men, and a gun and drugs were found in the vehicle. They do not believe that the incident is related to terrorism. One federal law enforcement official said that the incident appears to be a local criminal matter. Huh. Still doesn't explain why you would try to ram the spy agency's gate.
Yeah. Well, now that it's been a while since I've been at the NSA, but in fact it's been over a decade. But they didn't used to have signs out in front that said it was the NSA. I mean, was the building clearly marked? They might have just thought that they were like fleeing the police or something. And hey, turn right here.
It's possible.
Who knows?
People do tend to know what that.
Oh, they do. If they live in the area, presumably.
If you live in the area, you tend to know what that thing is.
Yeah. Okay.
American officials said today that they were still negotiating with their Iranian counterparts on one of the main issues remaining in their efforts to reach a deal on Iran's nuclear program, which is how to dispose of Iran's big nuclear stockpile, and that shipping the atomic fuel out of the country was still a possibility, because they're pushing back against public statements made Sunday by Iran's deputy foreign minister that seemed to rule out a deal under which uranium would be sent abroad, when he said there is no question of sending the stocks abroad.
So do the Iranians have a problem similar to the problem that we have, where 47 Republicans are saying one thing and the president's saying another?
Well, I mean, this is the deputy foreign minister, I mean, who's involved in the talks, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems to represent a slight difference in position from what they've been having for months. Maybe it was a tentative move to try something out. Maybe he's on a slightly different page from the foreign minister, Javad Zarif. Who knows?
Yeah.
But there's been a major scramble today as the talks go down to the wire tomorrow night.
That's going to be something to watch.
Most definitely. A North Carolina man who was convicted of multiple sexual offenses and forced to wear a GPS ankle bracelet for the rest of his life is entitled to a review under the Fourth Amendment, which guards against unreasonable searches, the Supreme Court ruled today.
Is the logic of this that he has served his sentence and
no.
No, okay, go ahead.
Supreme Court instructed a lower court to reevaluate whether the GPS tracker represents an unreasonable search after the state's high court failed to do so in its previous decision.
Right.
In other words, the Supreme Court did not rule on the merits of the case. It found the lower court had erred by concluding that it
did not constitute a search that falls under the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
The court wrote, the only theory we discern is that the state system of non-consensual satellite-based monitoring does not entail a search within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. That theory is inconsistent with this court's precedent.
So the debate is what is and what isn't a search, as opposed to, because what I was thinking was, you know, when is a search legal and appropriate and when is it not?
Right. No, they're saying, you know, when is it a search? They're basically saying that the state system of non-consensual satellite-based monitoring does not entail a search within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. They're saying that they were basically saying that, a GPS doesn't count, so you can wear a GPS.
So, but the Supreme Court is saying that a GPS does count.
Yeah, they're saying a GPS counts, and they've already found that a GPS counts in previous rulings.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Go back and do it again. It may be that they'll still have to wear it, but go back and do it again.
Yeah, fascinating. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
It's always great to see you. Have a wonderful day. We'll be right back. It's just a minute or so before the hour. And let's see. In the next hour, we're going to be talking about the Salk Institute for Biological Studies.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, and I'm pleased to have on the line with me Dr. David Schubert, who is a professor and laboratory head of Cellular Neurobiology Laboratory at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies. The website for the Salk Institute, of course, Salk, S-A-L-K.edu. And Dr. Schubert, welcome to the program. Dr. Schubert?
Yes?
Hey, welcome to the program. We're on the air.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. I understand that recently the World Health Organization has concluded that the ingredient in Roundup, glyphosate, could be a carcinogen?
That is correct, yes.
What led to that conclusion, and what does that mean for all of us?
Well, I think we really don't know the data from which, you know, this conclusion was based, because the actual text and all of the assays that they looked at have not been published yet. But what they did is they looked at the evidence from human exposure, some animal studies, some studies in more simple systems, and they concluded that Roundup is a potential carcinogen.
Now, Monsanto is fighting this worldwide, are they not?
Pardon?
And Monsanto is pushing back on this, I believe.
Yes, quite hard.
And because this is a multi-billion dollar business to them, I assume.
That's right.
Yeah. So if glyphosate or Roundup is a carcinogen or a potential carcinogen or even a moderate carcinogen, should we be worried about this? Are we getting enough to concern ourselves?
I think that's the problem. The herbicides have been herbicide formulations with glyphosate in them have been around for quite a while, and the problem is since the introduction of the genetically modified primarily soy and corn, which requires a lot of this herbicide in order to make it efficient for the farmers, the amount that has been in the environment and the amount that humans are exposed to has gone up enormously in the last 20 years. So initially, before the introduction of the GM crops, it was not very, there was not a high level of human exposure because the plants themselves were not exposed to the plant, to the herbicides. Right. But during the last 20 years, there's been a fundamental shift in agriculture in the United States and around the world in the sense that a lot of the chemicals that used to be just sprayed around the plants and on the plants, like insecticides, then they could wash them off. But right now, with the introduction of GM plants, these products get inside the plant, and so the human exposure is much greater. And
right.
the amount of glyphosate, in use has gone up like 14-fold in the last 20 years. So it's enormous exposure to humans. I think that's the problem.
A 1,400% increase.
14-fold, yeah.
1,400%.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which raises a couple of interesting questions. We have seen an explosion or an increase, let's say. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but a real significant increase in the number of people who appear to be intolerant of the primary protein in wheat, gluten. And just in the last decade or so, my understanding is, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but 10, 15 years ago, in order to increase the ability to harvest wheat with these giant threshing machines by just a few percent, actually. They used to, you know, basically cut off the wheat heads when the wheat was green, and it would gum up the machine. So now they spray Roundup over the wheat 3 days before they harvest it so that the entire plant is dead and brittle, so that when the threshing machines go over and pop the wheat berries off, they pop off more easily, and it's more efficient. And that increased efficiency pays for the cost of the Roundup. And there are some who are speculating that that means that there's all kinds of Roundup in wheat, and it might be the people who think that they're intolerant to gluten are actually intolerant to the combination of gluten and Roundup being in their system. Do you know anything about that?
That's a perfectly valid argument. This is something that most people don't realize, in the sense that people have some idea about, you know, genetically modified plants, and they require the being sprayed with the glyphosate herbicides in order to make them, do their thing, so to speak. But most people don't realize that the same compound is used as a drying agent, and it speeds up the harvesting of crops. So you can have a non-GM plant, which is, I mean, for example, a wheat. I don't think there's any GM wheat in the United States that, you know, is loaded with this particular chemical. So the chemical itself, it's a matter of, like all things, it's a matter of exposure. So, and exposure in combination with other chemicals or other, like proteins in the case of you were talking about. So, no, it's quite a real possibility. There's a lot of increase in a lot of different diseases, and it's very difficult to pin it down to one cause, but, you know, this is certainly a possibility.
We're talking with Dr. David Schubert of the Salk Institute for Biological Studies, a professor and head of the laboratory head of the Cellular Neurobiology Laboratory there. We had a scientist on this program, although this is not her particular area of science, but she's written some interesting and said some fairly thought-provoking things on this topic, who suggested that while glyphosate, while Roundup, is an herbicide, that is, it kills plants, not animals, as opposed to like an insecticide that kills insects, and therefore is theoretically not harmful to humans because we're not herbs, we're animals, we're not plants, we're animals, a different kingdom, that it interrupts a particular metabolic pathway relatively unique to plants, but it's not totally unique to plants. It's a metabolic pathway that is also fairly ubiquitous in bacteria, and that this glyphosate or Roundup getting into our guts might be really seriously messing with our gut bacteria, and that may account for this explosion of IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, and all these other things that you constantly see ads on TV for, you know, here, take this, you know, it'll make you feel better. Any research on that? Do you know anything about that?
That's certainly a major problem, because the assumption is when you make a drug, so I'm in the, our lab works on drug discovery for neurodegenerative disease, and so anybody that makes a drug, you design a drug for one target, but you always have these so-called off-target effects. So that while the glyphosate was designed to affect the plant enzyme, it was certainly has other effects, and that's what people are picking up. And the gut bacteria, it's known that the gut bacteria have the same enzyme as plants, some of them. So the glyphosate definitely kills some populations of gut bacteria. So this could be a problem. And it also has a lot of other effects. People, you can't predict these things until you do some studies. And the last 10 years or so, there have been, from my perspective, a large number of studies showing that this particular chemical can have some really nasty effects. And since it's an endocrine disruptor, it can potentiate, you know, tumor growth. It has a lot of things that are, you know, what we would consider in the drug world is off-target effects, and they were not necessarily predictable.
Right.
But,
they're real. Yeah.
They're real.
Dr. Schubert, we have only about a little more than a half a minute left. What can we do about this? What is being done about this?
I don't know what's being done, but hopefully I think you can't eliminate the product, but I think you can cut it back. It's not necessary to have the GM plants, you're really not getting that much with these, and that's the driving force for the human exposure. So I think going back to the way agriculture was done 20 years ago is not going to cause that much harm.
Right. Just back off on the GMOs.
Just back off on the major contributor to the driving.
Fascinating stuff. Dr. David Schubert of the Salk Institute, salk.edu. Thank you so much, sir, for dropping by today.
All right. Thank you.
Great talking to you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's amazing, you know, what we learn. It's like science gives and science takes away. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dominic in Severn, Maryland. Hey, Dominic, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. You wanted to weigh in on Victoria's story about the NSA, the cars who tried to run into the NSA thing?
Yeah, I saw a helicopter shot of the scene and was able to pin that down as being on the NSA employee only exit from the Baltimore-Washington Parkway. It looks like they took a wrong turn and simply panicked when they ended up being in front, faced with wall-to-wall security. They were two men driving a stolen car dressed in women's clothes, wearing feminine wigs. They had drugs and guns in the car. Apparently, the security determined that they were not going to stop a security vehicle. Looks like they cut them off. They collided with the security vehicle. I believe the driver of that vehicle ended up being shot. He was taken to shock trauma in Baltimore with not too severe injuries. Right. One of the people in the car was shot and killed, and the other was shot.
So it looks like these were like your basic kind of screw up criminals who were in the wrong place at the wrong time and tried to shoot their way out of it or drive their way out of it, and it just doesn't work that well when you're in front of the NSA.
No, if they'd been cool and just said they made a wrong turn, they probably could have turned away and nobody would have done anything.
Yeah, or if they tried to do this at a 7-Eleven, I mean, you know, they'd be 30 miles away right now. But the NSA has guns.
Right.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Dominic, thanks for the feedback. Thanks for the information. I appreciate it. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Richard in Cheney, Washington, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, hey, Tom. I was just going to touch back on proactive things. And 66-year-old white entitled guy here. Mm-hmm. And I've been with Bank America in all its iterations since, as we say, Jesus was a lance corporal. My wife and I have decided to move our accounts down to a local credit union. And I've heard this is a good possible move. What do you think, Tom?
I think it's a brilliant move. I think it's something that everybody should do. The benefit of credit unions, they're nonprofits, they're co-ops. So if you put money into a credit union, you are basically a stockholder in that credit union or a member of it. You can run for office in the credit union. You can become a director of it if you want. In fact, they're always looking for volunteers. Credit unions are protected by a credit union version of the FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. So your deposits are insured up to a certain amount. I don't frankly know how much it is, but it's probably the same as banks. It's between $100,000 and $250,000. And to the best of my knowledge, while we've had bank panics and we've had S&L panics back when Reagan deregulated the S&Ls there for a brief period of time, for 3 or 4 years, I don't think we've ever had a credit union panic. So,
Tom, I might ask only that by proxy, would I expect to pay more service charges because of the inability to then have a broad monetary base to?
I was a member of a credit union for the 5 years that we lived in Portland, and when I left, I had to stop that because you had to live there to be a credit union member. And what I found was that the credit union actually was less expensive than a bank, and their interest rates were better because they weren't skimming money off the top to give Jamie Dimon a multi-million-dollar salary. They didn't have any gold-plated faucets in the bathroom. They didn't have a corporate jet. They didn't have a huge marketing budget, and they didn't have to pay dividends to their stockholders. It's a nonprofit. So it's a good deal, Richard. Thank you for the call. Here's something that might cause the Republican Party to have a little concern. we can continue talking about glyphosate or glyphosate or Roundup or whatever if you'd like. I think that the information kind of stands, and it's pretty damn shocking stuff. But back to the Mike Pence and Indiana passing a law that says that it's legal to discriminate against gay people in that state. I get it that the Republican Party, in particular, I mean, you could say the conservative movement, but really it's the Republican Party. The Republican Party is the enforcement mechanism for the conservative movement. They're the ones who make the laws, right? Conservatives can sit around all day long and say, gee, there should be a law that says that you can discriminate against gay people, but it takes a certain number of legislators to do it. And as I've said many times, the Republican Party is basically made up of rich people, spokesmen for rich people, well-paid spokespeople for rich people, and suckers. And one of the main things that the Republicans have always done is they slice and dice the electorate, and they reach out to each one of these sucker groups with their own particular spokespeople to say, hey, you know, you should come in and be a Republican because, you know, we hate those people just like you do. And I even remember back in the 70s and 80s when the Republican Party was the party of we shouldn't have nanny state laws against smoking in public or is smoking in the office place. Remember that? I mean, that actually became a partisan issue for a while because the tobacco companies were buying off Republican legislators. There were a few Democrats, you know, from tobacco states who were in their pocket, too, but principally it was Republicans. So the bet that the Republicans are making right now is, I mean, you know, they clearly made a bet on white bigots in the South back in the 70s. This was Richard Nixon's Southern strategy. It was put onto steroids by Ronald Reagan, and it has been essentially the official policy of the Republican Party ever since to court, nurture, support, whatever they can, racial bigots, for lack of a better phrase. People, you know, the Southern strategy, as it were. Another part of their strategy has been to court the Christian fundamentalists and at the same time court the homophobes. Now, obviously, there's a lot of crossover. There's a lot of Christian fundamentalists who are homophobes. There's a lot of Christian fundamentalists who aren't homophobes. And in fact, there's some very good Christian there's probably some good Christian gays, no doubt about it, absolutely. The sentence I was trying to say is probably some Christians who are not homophobes. And God bless them. And in fact, there's probably a lot of them. But where it gets really interesting is when you look at the numbers, the recent numbers. And this was a study that was published. Oh, I hate it when these websites, when you print something out and it doesn't say where it came from. Oh, it's a Huffington Post. This came from the Huffington Post. 53% of voters said they felt favorably toward gays and lesbians. And it's more than half. The percentage of Americans who feel favorably toward evangelicals, 42%, less than half. 18% said they felt unfavorably toward gay and lesbians, but 28% reported unfavorable feelings towards evangelicals. So evangelicals are more disliked than gays and lesbians. And gays and lesbians are more liked than evangelicals. So maybe if Mike Pence is trying to put together a large enough coalition that the Republicans can control, you know, Indiana on an ongoing basis as the demographics and psychographics and zeitgeist and times and thinking and all that kind of stuff changes, what Mike Pence really needs to do is pass a law making it legal to discriminate against evangelicals. Now, I realize that, you know, that confronts the Indiana Civil Rights Law, Article 9 of the Civil Rights Law, which was passed in 1960. Originally, there were acts passed in 61, 63, and 71, and then it was amended in 1994. And it says, it is the public policy of the state to provide all of its citizens equal opportunity for education, employment, access to public conveniences and accommodations, and acquisitions through purchase or rental of real property, including but not limited to housing, and to eliminate segregation or separation based solely on race, religion, color, sex, disability, national origin, or ancestry. Notice it does not say sexual preference or sexual identity or gender identity or anything close to that. And this is why when you make discrimination legal in Indiana, and there's already a law in Indiana that says there are a few things you can't discriminate against or based on, what that means is that you can discriminate on a whole bunch of other things. You just can't discriminate on race, religion, color, sex, disability, national origin, or ancestry. So anyway, that's where that goes. This is interesting. Indiana business owner went on a local radio station. Case Steiger was writing about this over at Think Progress. An Indiana business owner went on a local radio station and said that he had discriminated against gay or lesbian couples even before Governor Mike Pence signed the law. He defended the practice. He said some LGBT he would tell gay people that equipment was broken in his restaurant and he couldn't serve them even though there were other people eating at other tables. He says, yes, so I have discriminated. Well, I feel okay with it because it's my place of business. I pay the rent. I build it with my money. My doing. It's my place. I can do whatever I want with it. They can have their lifestyle and do their thing in their place or with people that they want to be with them. Cute. And this guy has a business license. And this guy is doing business in the state of Indiana. And he is protect his banking work is invested, is protected by our government. He's using our public, he's using the police, he's using the fire, he's using all of our public utilities. We are all paying to help support his ability to conduct business. The least he could do is conduct his business based on the simple laws of the land. Your call's up next on this. I see Marty wants to challenge me on this. That should be an interesting conversation. Stick around 28 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
When do we end this bigotry in the United States? It's like step by step. We've gone a long way in 200 years. We've got a ways to go. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a couple of quick things I wanted to share with you, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. Actually, I'll get back to those things in a minute. I wanted to get Marty on here. Marty in Monroe, North Carolina. Hey, Marty, it says you want to disagree with me. What's up?
I don't disagree with you, maybe on occasion, but you got a lot of valid points, and I just love your show. Glad you had a vacation. Hope you and the missus had loads of fun.
Thank you, Marty.
But it just seems, you know, and this is my own personal perspective. I don't haven't talked to anybody about this, but, you know, hey, if somebody's gay or lesbian, oh, whoopee-doo. They don't, for the vast majority, because I'm an ex-roadie. I've worked in theaters and operas and Broadway plays, and, yeah, there's a lot of gays in that industry. But they never bothered me.
Right.
You know?
As they typically
and
don't bother
people. Unlike a lot of people. Well, unlike, you know, like religious people, they have a tendency to get overly excited and enthused and start shoving their beliefs down the other person's throat.
Yeah, I've had Mormons pitch at me. I've had Seventh-day Adventists pitch at me. I've had the Watchtower people pitch at me. I've never had a gay person trying to turn me into a gay person. Never happened.
Yeah, me either. But
so what's your point?
But as far as, you know, and this is where me and you disagree, your diatribe on the Republicans.
Right.
Very seldom do I hear you bitch and moan and groan about the Democrats. And I can tell you, you know, personally, eye to eye with LBJ, Lyndon Burke Johnson, said when he was signing the Civil Rights Bill, but it's not appropriate for airwaves.
Yeah, Marty, I would suggest that you go to Snopes.com. LBJ, and it's Lyndon Baines Johnson, never said that. That was the comment was something to the effect of, if you give those black people, you know, free food and free housing, they'll vote for you forever. And he never said it. B, it was made up by, it was a right wing slur, and it's a right wing slur that has been spread so many times over the years, particularly through email, that a lot of Republicans believe it, but it is not true.
Yeah, and I'm looking through the Constitution, and nowhere in the Constitution does it say anything about marriage.
You're correct.
you know.
Nowhere in the Constitution does it say anything about chewing your food, but you have the right to do that.
True. And with the current
what's your point, Mark?
With Iraq, Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 2,
of
this is talking about the president. He shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided two-thirds of the senators present concur.
Right.
And then we go to the 10th Amendment. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, or reserved to the states respectively or to the people.
Right.
So, you know, if it doesn't harm anybody, per se, you know, physically harm.
If
nobody's been physically harmed by not being able to get married.
Okay, so your argument is that if I run a business and I discriminate against gay people, I'm not harming anybody, and therefore it's not unconstitutional or illegal, and what's the big deal? Is that, in essence, what you're saying?
The only person that's going to get harmed are those proprietors.
Well, no, I would say that, as I pointed out earlier, the highest rate of suicide in the United States is young gay people. What you are saying to an entire class of people who didn't choose, by and large, to be that way, they were born that way, is there's something wrong with you, you are inferior, you are bad, you are being censured by society, you are being discriminated against by this company. The argument that you're making, Marty, and I say this compassionately, not angrily, the argument that you're making is the exact same argument that Strom Thurmond and George Wallace were making in the 1960s about, well, Bobby Kennedy, why the hell do you want to come down here to the South and tell us that we have to serve black people? They're perfectly happy to sit in the black part of the restaurant.
Oh, the Dixiecrats.
Yep.
Yeah. Never quite figured out that group of people.
Well, they were bigots, and the Democratic Party embraced them after the Civil War. Andrew Johnson, arguably one of the worst presidents in the history of the United States. Abe Lincoln thought it would be so slick to have a guy from the opposite party as his vice president. Big mistake. I don't think he expected to get assassinated. Who knows? But Andrew Johnson was a Democrat, and the Democrats had historically been the party of slavery. And, you know, they continue to be that right up until the 1960s. LBJ flipped that when he signed the Civil Rights Act. You could say that the beginning of the flipping of that happened with the FDR administration and the Truman administration, the integration of the Army, the integration of federal jobs, and was actually exacerbated, was strengthened by Republicans like Dwight Eisenhower and whatnot. But to your point that if somebody is being discriminated against, they're not being harmed. I just have to respectfully disagree. There is a harm. Discrimination does produce harm, and we have to acknowledge that, Marty. And if we're going to discriminate against people based on something over which they have no control, then we have become a coarser society. We've become Saudi Arabia. I'm not going to go. I don't want to go there. Marty, thanks for the call. Helen in Ithaca. Hey, Helen, what's up?
Hi there. Well, before I make my point, I wanted to say that I didn't catch every minute of your show last week, but I thought that Danielle and Shano and Troy, and I don't know the other people's names, they did a good job manning the ship for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought they did a spectacular job. I tuned in a half a dozen times or so when I could, and it was great.
Yeah, you should be proud of them.
I am.
The thing, I just had this dumb idea for a license plate for Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bigot and proud, you know.
Bigot and proud.
Yeah.
And the land where bigots flourish.
Yeah, and then they can get coffers for the state, you know, the treasury there, because
yeah. These
are vanity plates. They're going to have to pay extra for them. And then, it's kind of like an implicit inference. I know that sounds redundant, but it's not redundant. But, you know, it's like the gay pride, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, when I grew up in Michigan, the license plate used to say Land of Lakes, you know, back in the
uh-huh.
60s or 70s. I don't know when they changed it. And then they went to Winter Wonderland, and I don't know what it is now, but, it could be Land of Bigots. Hey.
Land of Bigots, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm from Land of Lincoln, actually.
Oh, yeah. Illinois, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I'm from Chicago.
Yeah, there you go. Great ideas, Helen. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening to AM 1470 there in Ithaca. Tim in Whitewater, Wisconsin. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, so I'm a gay man and grew up in a fundamentalist home. Dad was a pastor. And I heard a caller earlier talk about the term God-fearing and equated it with respecting authority or being afraid of the authority within the church. And I have to disagree with that because you have to remember that these people, their very most foundational belief is that God will send people to hell for eternity unless they believe or accept or do whatever the right way.
Right.
And so they are in a position where they actually literally are God-fearing. Now, they'll say God-fearing means believing or respecting or whatever, but really they have a faith that is based in fear. And until they see that and that they see that they are in a faith that equates God to an abusive father. I mean, imagine if somebody's father said, you have to agree with everything I say or I'm going to put you in the basement for the rest of your life.
Right.
That's just, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that's where they're coming from. And how do you argue against that when the foundation of the argument is so different from anything that logic can dictate?
Well, it's not just, and it's not just abusive. I mean, you know, look at what God did to Abraham, you know, go kill your oldest son. I mean, you could argue that it's psychopathic, that in some ways the God of the Old Testament is described as an angry sociopath. And in other ways, he's described in glowing and loving terms and, you know, in Psalms and in Song of Songs in particular. But there's some pretty scary parts in there, you know, Noah and Job and Joshua. So, yeah, I'm with you. And well said, Tim. And your thoughts as a gay man on the, if I may ask your opinion in response to my previous caller, if you lived in a state where people were a business when you walked in, identified you as gay and refused to serve you, what effect would it have on you?
I'd be insulted. I would feel hurt. I would walk away and I would carry that with me for a long time. I mean, I have brothers. And who are the kind of Christian I talked about. And sometimes the things they say to me, I can't let go of them for days. I mean, I'm still a Christian. I'm a different kind of Christian. I go to my pastor and I say, I'm obsessing on this thing that happened because, and, you know, for example, I have a brother who, told me that when I had a boyfriend, he refused to allow the boyfriend to enter his house.
Oh, no.
You know, and so I obsessed on that for months.
Yeah.
Months.
I can imagine.
Maybe years.
Yeah.
It just, you know, so to walk into that, it just reignites all of that. Everything that I heard growing up about gay people, how people were allowed to make jokes about gay people were allowed to use the term gay as a slur, but we were never allowed to openly discuss who I really was.
Yeah. Tim, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Thank you so much. And for listening to the program and for calling in. It's great to hear from you. I wish you the very best, my friend. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I wonder if Mike Pence and the bigots around him really give a damn about the people that they're hurting. Or if it's all just about the money and the power. Welcome back. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Norma, what's on your mind?
Well, I was going to chime in on today's discussion, but we're running out of time. And as a student of the University of Tom Hartman, I wanted you to see if you could talk to everybody about next year's election. It's not just a presidential election. There are 35 senators who are coming up for re-election.
Yep, most of them Republicans.
11 of them are Democrats. Sir?
Most of them Republicans. Forgive me for interrupting you. I'm sorry, Norma.
Okay, that's okay. 11 of them are Democrats. Mm-hmm. The other 24 are Republicans.
Right.
If people who live in these states where these people are coming up for election are not happy with these things that are happening in our country, like Hobby Lobby and this governor that should be recalled, they need to start looking around for someone that they can get to replace these people who are 80% white Christian male conservatives, and our way is the only way, 1%ers.
Mm-hmm.
We need to find people who understand what it means to live in America in a normal society, in a normal life, in a normal neighborhood. And we need to get out there and do as you say. Democracy is not a spectator sport. Get out there and start talking. I don't have money to support anything, but I have a big mouth. And I go out every day talking to people, trying to get them to pay attention to what is happening. Even, you know, when I was watching Senator Jeff Sessions say they even want to cut Meals on Wheels, my neighborhood is full of elderly. What are they supposed to eat? He wants some money for job training? Is my 95-year-old neighbor supposed to take his walker and go look for a job?
Right.
Yeah, these things should not be happening in our country, and it's up to us to fix them. And we need to get out there and find someone who knows what it means to go to work every day and not have enough money. We need to get out there and get organized, like you say, grassroots, and find somebody to replace these selfish, self-centered rich people who don't know what it means to be poor. And thanks for letting me rant, Tom.
It was a great rant, Norma. Yeah, and I would just add that, you know, for many of us, the person, you know, to paraphrase Pogo, the person that we're looking for is us. You know, we.
Yes, and you know, when you think about the man who's in charge of the Secretary of Agriculture, he used to work for biotechnologies. That's why we're eating Roundup.
Yeah.
And when you have people who are sick and they don't understand why they have indigestion, it's the food. You don't need to go get an acid. You need to eat clean food, or what you know we call organic food. You and I know this.
Yeah.
But there's not enough of it for all of us because of the mega farms. I don't know what people will eat when they figure this out. But, you know, that's the problem, though.
Yeah, that's kind of the bad news. The good news on that end, Norma, is that you can eat an enormous amount of food inexpensively if you eat a plant-based diet. And
that's true. I have my own garden. I tell people, never live where you can't raise some of your own food. You need control of your own food.
Right, right. And you know, as people reduce the amount of meats and chickens and fish and things like that from their diet, and replace them with more and more vegetables, A, they're eating lower on the food chain. They're getting less poison. B, they're consuming massively less water because enormous amounts of water go into agriculture, into animal agriculture. And C, they're going to be healthier. I mean, there's enormous body of – Google sometime the TOR pathway, T-O-R pathway. It'll astonish you how eggs, milk, and meat trigger a pathway that actually turns on cancer. It's part of the body. It's supposed to be there to help us when we're little to grow, you know, when we're drinking mom's milk, but not as adults. Anyhow, Norma, thank you for the call. Wow, looks like it's turning into a beautiful day here in D.C. Well, the sun came out and everything. I was just mentioning the TOR pathway. We were talking about eating low on the food chain and eating a plant-based diet. TOR is target of rampamycin, if I'm saying it correctly. Rampamycin is an anti-cancer drug. But this TOR pathway, this target of rampamycin, the development of cancer can actually be stopped with the rampamycin hitting this. You know, I'm mangling the science here. Right? Just Google it. You'll find out what I'm talking about. I need not go through a whole long explanation. Keith in Shorewood, Wisconsin. Hey, Keith, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, beautiful day in Milwaukee as well.
Great.
You know, it's great. You know, it must be great to be able to go away for a week and have a really good team back you up and
I can't tell you
on the ship while you're away.
It is wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a segue into my point about what's going on in Indiana. You obviously hire people, and I know you've had some companies, and you've been hiring people in the past.
Yes.
And I think here's an example of, you know, for some reason or other, the Republican Party has picked up this reputation as being pro-business. But here's an example of a bill that is really anti-business. When you are trying to hire people, you're trying to get the best person you could find. Well, a lot of times that person might happen to be gay.
Yep.
So you've got national, international companies throughout Indiana, and how in the world are they going to bring somebody in, a recruit that they think they might really like, if that person feels that they're going to be unwelcome in Indiana?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I absolutely agree, and it's one of the reasons I'm so pleased, proud, whatever the word is, impressed, I guess actually is the best word, with this op-ed that Tim Cook, who is openly gay, and the CEO of Apple Computer, which is, if not the largest company in the United States, maybe the second largest company in the United States. I mean, this is a massive multi-billion-dollar corporation that does generally very good work and produces great products. And here's a man of, you know, significant consequential power, authority, moral authority, and whatnot, saying this is wrong. This is just wrong what they're doing in Indiana. And they're trying to do it in other states, too. They're having a debate in Georgia right now about whether they should do what they did in Indiana. And it's just it is just the Republican Party reaching out to the bigots. They need an extra 2% or 3% or 5% to win an election. And, hey, what people out there have we not already grabbed? Oh, yeah, let's get the homophobes. And it's a horrible, horrible thing. Keith, thank you for the call. Well said. Ann in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Ann, thanks for listening to KBIA.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Oh, I love your program.
Thank you.
I saw the last 2 minutes of the interview between George and Mike Spence, and my jaw dropped. I was so appalled. And then he wouldn't answer any of the questions.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of going, how can you think that the Republicans are the multi-rich, the suckers that represent them, and then the suckers?
Yeah, the paid shills for them and the suckers, yeah. Those are my three categories.
I think the suckers are lemmings.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
I got my grandfather told a story of he was walking along the a road in Denmark with his dad, and they saw a lemming, and they took a stick and rubbed the back like they do with pigs, you know, and have a relax, and the thing gyrated and gyrated and finally keeled over and died.
Whoa. Yeah, I understand. Lemmings are strange. So,
anyway, I think that we should start a program, Do Unto Others, and then have the people turn around and see if their pants are soiled.
Yeah, there you go. And thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. About Governor Mike Pence's new policy,
mm-hmm.
it's not a far stretch to see where we are going. First, was Indiana's state name named after the American Indian? And second, if so, look how the Indianians started out their statehood, trying to wipe out the inspiration, the American Indian, for whom they named their state. What do you think, Tom? Thanks.
It's a very interesting theory. I don't know the history of the name Indiana, Michael, but if that is it, then that does say something. Thanks for the call. It's a very interesting thought. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's up?
Well, just to kind of chime in with everybody else, maybe they should start a boycott and divestment movement of Indiana, like Eli Lilly is located in Indianapolis, and we can just switch our medications to other companies. But what I really wanted to talk about is core beliefs and how you kind of engage people into changing perhaps or even putting a seed in to maybe change their core beliefs. I had a very interesting conversation with a union person, the head engineer of the hospital that I work in, and, you know, he said that he was a Republican, and it just kind of blew me away because he's a very dedicated union person, but yet he's a Republican, and I don't see that the Republican Party, maybe like back in Nixon and Nelson Rockefeller's day, they actually mentioned unions and supported unions.
Dwight Eisenhower supported unions aggressively. Nixon didn't.
Right,
but Eisenhower
right.
was the last guy who did.
But not today. And, you know, how he said, well, that's socialism. You know, people don't understand, you know, what these terms mean because they're fed such bad information. I spent 2 hours talking to this person, and I think it was in, you know, that it was a good conversation, and maybe it changed his mind a bit. But anyway, how do you, you know, I'm really, you know, kind of amazed that people have these contradictory kind of belief systems.
Yeah. And there's two pieces to that, John, and we're just about out of time, so I'll do this really quick. One is there's a tribal mentality, and it causes people to block out information that contradicts, even if it's real information, that contradicts their belief. And so it's really difficult to simply challenge people on facts. The second, though, is if you can challenge them on facts and do so in a respectful way that actually causes them to go, aha, I didn't know that, or to learn something, then, you know, sometimes you can move things forward. We get a lot of people who call this program who say, you know, I used to be a Republican or a Libertarian, and now I'm not, you know, from just what I've heard and what I've learned. So keep it up, John. Keep it up. That 2 hours you spent, I guarantee you, there was an impact to that. Good on you for that. Thank you so much. And thank you all for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow for another 3 hours. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Tag your it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.